Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good morning. Welcome to this edition of Atlanta Business Radio, powered by Business Radio X. I'm your host, Alex Gossett-Shiflett, and we have a very special guest in our studio today. But before we get started, make sure you are connected with us on social media, Twitter at Business Radio X. Also, today's show, Atlanta Business Radio, you can follow us at Atlanta Biz Radio, and you can connect with me personally on Twitter at Alex G. Shiflett. I'd love to hear from you, and you can check out the pictures of our guest in the studio today. All right. Our very special guest today, I would like to welcome Mr. Joe Guth. In January of 2015, Joe was appointed to serve as president of Cinnabon. After serving 4 months as the brand's chief operating officer, previously, Guth worked with clients such as the Coca-Cola Company, Molson Coors Brewing Company, and Staples. His prior roles were in general management and strategy with Coca-Cola and Yum! Brands in domestic and international markets. With over 20 years of experience in food service, consumer products, and retail, he brings a breadth of experience relevant to the continued growth of the Cinnabon brand. Joe is originally from Michigan, has a BBA and MBA from the University of Michigan. He currently lives in Atlanta with his wife and 2 children. Joe, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Alex.
Well, thank you so much for being with us on Business Radio X. First question, right out of the gate. What was your very first job and how much money did you make?
Very first job was a newspaper route. So obviously good business ethic, waking up early in the morning and hauling the bag with my bike and sometimes on foot. Walking around the neighborhood. I believe I was paid by the paper that I delivered. So I think it roughly amounted on an hourly basis to probably about $2 to $3 an hour.
Okay. Can you describe the moment you knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur and what did you do about it?
I think, you know, the moment where I was reflecting on in my career was probably right when I exited school. I don't know if it would have been entrepreneurship as is traditionally defined, but I basically the basic routes for coming out of a BBA program at Michigan at the time, which has changed quite a bit since then, obviously, was to pursue something in the accounting arena or something in the traditional sales arena. And I definitely wanted to be something more around concept development and marketing. And that's why I pursued something with a smaller company and actually was down here in Atlanta, Tenzar. They had a small consumer products division. And so I took a marketing manager role, which was not something that was typically available to someone out of school. And it was very grassroots. It was very much, you write your own copy, you manage your own projects, you test your own projects. So a lot of times it was fencing and agricultural projects. So there was a lot of putting on jeans and going out into the back of the factory and doing our own version of product testing. So, but it was great. It really got me exposure to all different types and aspects of the business.
And so you went to the University of Michigan.
Correct.
What kind of student were you?
Let's see. I guess I was, I wouldn't call myself the most diligent of students. It was more of probably someone who was really challenging thinking and really someone who was really, I guess, trying to push the envelope in terms of what we were learning and why we were learning it versus so much of, boy, you did a great job on that assignment. You filled it out and you get 100%.
Well, I noticed on your LinkedIn page that you speak Spanish, French, Portuguese, and Japanese. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, at different levels of fluency, that's for sure. But Spanish and French for sure. Portuguese is probably more like Portignol. And my Japanese is limited. But yes, I did take some lessons when I was spending a lot of time there with Coca-Cola.
Being bilingual, is there one of those languages that you do use more in business?
Absolutely. I mean, in our business, in food service, where at this point I'm mostly focused on our domestic business, Spanish is very, very helpful. We definitely have bakeries out there where the predominant language within the bakery is Spanish. In fact, we recently had, I speak to every manager that comes through our training program, which is Wow You. We call it Wow You because that's what we want to do with our guests is wow them. And we had a couple of folks who had a translator for most of the week. And so I ended up doing my presentation on the brand and the overview of the brand in both English and Spanish.
And I've read a lot of your stuff and you talk about being a leader. When did you know that you were a leader? And can you give us an example?
It's a great question. You know, I never really reflect on myself as a leader per se. It's more of focus on inspiring people to do something more as a team. I think I would tell you the majority of my career up until probably the last 5 to 7 years, I was more in an influencing role where it was leadership wasn't about I'm the guy in the big office telling everybody what to do so much as it was I had an understanding of where we needed to go, helped people understand how and why we should get there, and inspiring them along the way. You know, I would say probably it was really that's what leadership was for me. More formal roles of leadership probably came in the last 5 to 7 years where you are a general manager or in this case, a president. But honestly, it's a title that, you know, I'm excited about, but it's not something I like to tout a lot of. I really think great leadership isn't about telling people what to do, but really inspiring people.
Yeah. And yesterday when I was at the Cinnabon at the West Point Mall, I would talk to your two employees, Kyle, and I think it was TK or KT. It was something like
KT
that.
KT and Kyle KT. At North Point Mall,
and,
yes.
And I said, have you guys ever met him? And they're like, oh, yeah, we've met him. He's a great guy. And I thought that was really neat that, you know, they know you and they were just like, yes, he's very approachable, very friendly.
Well, here's the thing. You know, some people have asked, so where do you spend your time? And I would say I spend 80% plus of my time on people. I'm using that in the very broadest sense, whether it's spending time with my team and making sure that they have what they have, making sure I have the right people on the team, whether that be recruiting, evaluating, sometimes exiting people. But then the other big piece of that is our franchisees. Because we're a franchise model, the vast majority of what happens in the moment of truth is really with them and the people that they hire in their organizations. So making sure that I have the right franchisees, that they have the right tools to hire the right people, retain the right people, and deliver those wow experiences, I mean, that's 80% plus of what
I do. What are the qualities of the right people?
I think it's, I know this may sound a little funny, it's people who care about people. So a lot of my questions revolve around what's important to you? How do you hire people? How do you retain people? How do you pay people? How do you keep them around? What's the culture you build? Those are the questions that I ask. Because most of the people that are franchisees that come are at the point where I'm interviewing them, they've already been vetted for basic, you know, do they have food service experience? Do they have multi-unit experience? Have they managed frontline employees? That's something that almost you can get off of paper. It's then the rest of the play or the rest of the story, which is how are you with people? I thought that one of the best lessons I learned was with when I was at Yum. I was fortunate enough to spend some time with David Novak, who's the former CEO. And one of his rules of thumb was I'd only hire people that I would be comfortable that my children would work for. Oh. And so, you know, I try to keep that in mind when I'm hiring people either onto my team or we're putting a franchisee into Cinnabon. Would you be comfortable? For me, it would be Jack and Abby when they're old enough. They're only 7 and 3 now. So no imminent opportunities to start work at Cinnabon. But I would say, you know, would I be comfortable with them working for this person? And I feel like it's a great, simple screener. And it's one that probably isn't a straightforward criteria per se, but I'm sure we could list that out. But it's one that really is a good gut check. So,
Executive producer Ryan McPherson here, jumping in with a few questions. We're talking with president of Cinnabon, Joe Guth. And for those listeners who don't know, we have some Cinnabon in the studio here today. Smells delightful. You can check out a picture, if that's good enough for you, on Twitter at Atlanta Biz Radio, Atlanta B-I-Z Radio. And so, Joe, how many locations of Cinnabon are around the country and abroad as well, right?
So overall, worldwide, we're at roughly 1,500 locations in about 55 countries. So in the United States, we're approaching 800 units. Mm-hmm. That's inclusive of our express units that we do with Schlotzky's, as well as our baking kiosks that we've been doing in a lot of travel centers with chains such as Maverick and Pilot and Flying J. Mm-hmm. For malls specifically, we're at roughly 250 and growing very rapidly. So we're excited about that. The future, we've had a really good couple of years.
Well, that's the second part of the question is, where can you expand to for beyond? Where is some hot areas, trending areas that you would like to see Cinnabon head into going down the rest of 2016 and beyond?
Yeah. So just to put a caveat straightforward, because we're privately held, I cannot speak specifically to the amount of growth. But what I will tell you is when you look at the number of mall locations we have, the number of airport locations we have, the number of convenience and travel locations we have, there is huge amounts of room to grow.
So
we're far, far away from what I would call saturation.
That's great. And so, Alex, I know there's probably one right around your neighborhood that you visit frequently. And I have to say a personal story about Cinnabon. I was in Iraq from 07 to 08, and we used to drive across town, across Baghdad, across a combat zone to go get Cinnabon at the local combat outpost. So I actually ate some over there, and it was delightful. It tastes even sweeter and more precious when you can get those when you're over there. So that's my personal testament to
God. God bless you.
Yeah, a lot of fun. It was at the PX there on I think it was Camp Liberty or something, and we drove for like 30 miles across the area to get that, and other things too. So, but Cinnabon was high on our list for sure.
Well, and I think that's a testament to the legacy of the management of the brand, including my predecessor, Cat Cole, was not only the license to let the brand travel, but actually promoting the brand in different ways, different formats, different locations. As we were chatting earlier before we went on air, there's the franchise side, but then there's also very much the licensed side of the business. Which is very robust and growing for us, with partnerships with Taco Bell, with our Cinnabon Delights, as well as Pillsbury and their whole line that we use in the refrigerated dough case. So I think allowing the brand to travel has only made it more big and more iconic. And we've seen nothing but growth. I think a lot of times brands fear that allowing the brand to travel will devalue it. And that can happen. You can have a dilutive effect if not managed correctly. But I think we've done a really good job in not having it.
I have to say one more thing. Cinnabon is as classic as American Pie these days. It is iconic. Everybody knows it. And it is certainly a worldwide recognized brand. And I think that's great. Alex?
Yeah, I wanted you to talk a little bit about your transition, because you've worked at other large companies like Coca-Cola and Molson Coors Brewing. But describe for us your transition into taking on the new role as president of Cinnabon.
So it was really fortunate, because I've had fantastic experiences, both the University of Michigan, 10 years at Coca-Cola, learning about the franchise business. I think a lot of people forget that Coke is a franchise business, because people think franchise and they think food service, they think retail. Wonderful lessons learned both here and abroad. And then my time at Yum, really learning how to manage food service business, learning a lot about people and people management. All of these things that with Cinnabon has really been a capstone for me, because all these experiences are relevant to what we do at Cinnabon, whether that's in the license and CPG side or managing the franchise. And I think what's been really fun is that as big as Cinnabon is as a brand, with 95% brand awareness, we're small. We're small in terms of our team, in terms of the number of units we have relative to the size of the brand. And to me, that just highlights the opportunity. So I think what's been exciting is all the things that I've learned at those other companies, are relevant and we're bringing to bear at Cinnabon, and it's yielding pretty significant results. And it's fun because, you know, we're small enough where we can make calls on things. Like, we've changed the logo, we've changed the store concept, we've changed our technology platform, we've changed the uniforms that people wear, we changed offices recently. Right. And so we're able to do that in a 12-month time frame. And to be able to do that with a brand that's so big and so well-known and has such notoriety, like getting into being placed in Better Call Saul on the premieres of both seasons, in Daddy's Home with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg. It's a huge diversity and a kind of a paradox, but one that's very fun and one that yields a lot of opportunity to apply that expertise. So,
right. What surprised you most about the role as president?
Like I said, one of the things that surprised me is how small we were. When you think of Cinnabon so big and how small the team is. The other thing that surprises me, or has surprised me in a great way, is just how much recognition and impressions we can generate on earned, what we call earned media. And so we've got, with product placements in Hollywood, to continued growth in the licensed channel, to candidly growth within our franchise business by applying some of these basic what I consider to be premises that I've learned in other franchise businesses, we've just got so much more opportunity to go. And so I think that's been fun, is to see how big it is and yet how small we are, and that highlighting the opportunity that we can go forward and realize as a team.
Yeah, and it's pretty nice to say president, right? Mr. President.
Yeah, but like I said, it is the funny quick story.
Sure.
So Jack, 7. Probably about 6 or 8 months ago, he knew I worked at Cinnabon. And so he's like, Dad, so, you know, we're getting ready for school. And he says, Dad, you're going to go sell some Cinnabons today? I said, yes, Jack, I am. And he says, so what do you do at Cinnabon? I said, well, Jack, I'm the president. He's like, you're the president? So I think he's just learning about presidents. But again, it's funny because I have had a number of those instances where people go, oh my gosh, you're the president of Cinnabon. And it's like, yeah, it is a super cool job, but it seems a lot bigger than it is. But it is. It's a ton of fun. And there's times where it's surreal where I'm in New York at a movie premiere for Daddy's Home and Will Ferrell's sitting behind me. And they're talking about Cinnabon throughout the movie. And then we go to the after party and there's a Victoria's Secret model standing next to me eating a Cinnabon. It's all very surreal at times. But like I said, I think probably the biggest thing is how much fun it is.
So when you were sitting there in front of Will Ferrell, did you just kind of turn around and go, I'm the president?
No, I didn't. And, you know, I'm kicking myself because I'm such a huge fan that I should have turned around and said, but I don't like to bother people. Yeah. So it's, you know, he's a pretty famous guy.
Oh, yeah.
My wife was sitting next to me. And she's like, don't turn around. He's sitting right by the time the show was over,
don't
he was gone.
Him.
So yeah, unfortunately, I did not get to meet Will. So,
describe your most successful moment and your least successful moment so far.
That's a good question. You know, I think one of the most successful moments really for me was when we were most recently, and again, this is a result of team effort, was when we've recently published our results relative to unit level economics and how far we've come. We've had triple digit unit growth. We've had double-digit both revenue and profit growth on the bottom line for franchisees, and we've really been able to generate that in a really short period of time. So certainly that was one of the most successful moments that I feel like, and again, really proud of the team that was able to do that and the team we've been able to build. We're still very collaborative and dynamic and feel like we, you know, we've had some changes, but all for the better. You know, I would say that the toughest part of the job, or I don't know if you call it least successful, but it's certainly the most unpleasant, was is when you have to tell people that it's not a right fit. Mm. And in some of those cases, and they're fantastic people, but just not the right fit for the role or not the right fit for the business. And those are, I don't know if I'd call that least successful, but it's certainly the most painful part.
Well, I want to ask, let's kind of turn the conversation over to some advice you might give small businesses or entrepreneurs. I read a quote when you were interviewed on Fox News, and you said, don't seek perfect information when all instincts point you in the right direction. Can you give us an example of when you followed your instincts and it turned out to be a good decision?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think there's a lesson learned from, even in my time at larger companies, is you can overanalyze things and you can do research on things that you know to be true. And that'll take you more time and more money to do that. But actually, in the end, you knew it all along. And it's about mitigating downside risk. So let me give you an example. We had many of our units not on a point of sale. So we took that opportunity to say, well, let's not just keep putting out the same point of sale, but what would be the next generation of point of sale? How do we use this as an opportunity to leapfrog? And so we went out and we evaluated different points of sale and we selected, we did our due diligence. We did testing for probably three to six months with a couple of operators, not 50 operators, not 100 operators, mm-hmm. but two to three. And we selected Revel, Revel Systems, who is also the point of sale provider of choice for Apple. And recently received $100 million in private equity funding. And we did that testing and we moved. And some would say, well, maybe you should have tested it broader, or maybe, well, what if you're wrong? Well, here's the thing. It's an iPad. And what can you do with an iPad? Well, lots of stuff. Mm-hmm. And if for some reason the software wasn't working, guess what? We're in the cloud. We redesign it. We redeploy it and we move on. It's not like the old technology. So I felt like that was one where, you know, some people would test and test and test, and it would be years before they would eventually get to a full rollout. Now we'll have half of our system on it and probably the other half within the next few years, because we were able to say, look, it's an iPad. It can do lots of things. Can it count money? Yes, mm-hmm. I think so. And it can do a lot more. And so it came to a point where you knew enough about it where you take the leap and don't overanalyze it. And it has already yielded benefits. We got 2 or 3 months into the rollout and we get a call from Apple. And Apple said, hey, so I understand you're rolling out Apple Pay. Yes, we are. So, I mean, it's great. That's one of those things that you knew, you know, we didn't know what we didn't know, but we knew that was a good idea and a technology that had enough critical mass, both within the consumer realm, as well as with our employees, millennials, which are a lot of them. This is a relevant technology, one that's very robust, mm-hmm. arguably one of the most used in the world. Mm-hmm. Let's take a chance. That's a bet we can make without having to overtest or research this thing for years.
Yeah, and that kind of piggybacks into another question here about technology. How do you begin to implement that into your entire system, from the production side to delivering? Because it's a basic, it's eating. It's one of the oldest things people do. But you're making it so much sweeter for people. So technology, it plays a large part. And how is that playing into the delivery of the product as well?
So we're still probably about 6 to 8 months into the deployment of this technology. There's so many layers. I think that the trick of it is, how do you stage it? Because you can definitely get a deer in the headlights look from your franchisees in terms of all the things you can do. And so we're still in some basic blocking and tackling. How are you organizing the buttons? How are we streamlining it? But there's so many different levels. It's all about staging it. Let's get the basic benefit first, which is getting it out there, and it's actually cheaper than our last point of sale. So that alone is gonna get us there. But there's still, you know, like any system, we've got to work out the bugs and
ease of use, right? You don't want to have to spend hours and days and weeks on training how to use it.
And that's the good news, because it's iOS technology. It is intuitive, yes. Right? That's why my 3 and 7 year old are probably as adept at my iPhone as I am. And
right.
So that fortunately comes part and parcel with the platform that we've selected. Right, right. But now it's, what's the next level? So the next level would be managing labor. And it's got a labor scheduling tool. I mean, there are times where I'd walk into a Cinnabon 8 months ago, I'd be lucky to find a phone, much less, you know, an iPad that could schedule people. And so, you know, what's after that? We've got automated production that'll run off sales. What's after that? You know, we get into food cost management. What's after that? It's Apple Pay. It's it's then rolling out mobile loyalty and integrated payment and things that, you know, I'm under NDA with Apple now that we can start to roll out. So there's so many layers.
Yes.
To still go. I mean, the Revel itself can actually act as a self-service kiosk, because it has a front-facing, you probably saw at North Point where it had a front-facing iPad mini. Well, that can actually be turned into a self-service kiosk. So I don't even need to buy a kiosk anymore.
Right. You could have like a vending machine with Cinnabon in there and all run through the iPad right there. So there is no limits to how technology can play in this. Either going to make you money or save you money. And I think that's ultimately what you want to do.
Well, and I think the focal point of this all is around enhancing the guest experience by freeing up time of our crew members and team members to not have to focus as much on, do I need to let someone go home or do I have to put more cinnamon rolls in the oven. This will tell you that. So what does that allow you to do? It allows you to do more of what you need to do, which is deliver that wow guest experience.
Right.
And then by doing so, that's what stands out. If you look on the industry today, it's by far and away service that's setting people apart versus product. I mean, you got to have a great product.
Yes.
Good news, we got that.
Right.
We got the best cinnamon roll in the world. And so now it's how we deliver it, and we'll continue to innovate in and around it. How do we elevate the service component? And that's where this technology helps us do that.
I think Cinnabon has done a great job of interweaving themselves into the American culture, the fabric of society. Like you said, it's in movies, commercials, it's in all kinds of different places. It's all over the place. And so that's part of it too, but delivering the good product with good people is truly a combination that can't be beat. So so what is next for Cinnabon, you know, 2016 and beyond? Where do you see some of this trending to?
Well, I think, you know, let me start from the premise that I think there's such a high level of demand and latent equity in the market for Cinnabon that continuing to make it more available in the places where we already are, but not enough of, like airports. We only have 16 airport locations. Yeah. At our peak, it was closer to 150. People know us for airports. I mean, the runway there is huge. It's like that in pretty much every channel. Continuing to push out in the right way in licensing opportunities. And my predecessor, Kat Cole, is over that for all focus brands. And Cinnabon's a big component of that. So us working together will continue to grow the brand. For the franchise specifically, it will be rolling out the new logo and the new store look that we have at North Point Mall here in Georgia. It will continue to be innovating in and around the brand itself and how do we make it more accessible and give people different forms and shapes. So big is the new small and focusing on bites and portability, continuing to dial up our beverage line in a way that would be more relevant to our guests. Those are things that I think you'll see in the short term, in addition to the rollout of the technology platform, both for the operations as well as our guests. So, I mean, those would be the big things. And the good news is that the business is performing at a very high level. And we're just getting started.
Yeah, wow. Sounds like it.
Well, I have one more question about giving advice to small businesses or entrepreneurs. If you could go back 10 years ago, what advice would you give yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing would be to focus on EQ versus IQ. If, at least for me personally, it was always about what's the right answer? What's the right answer? What's the right answer? And the right answer will win the day. Well, the right answer is important, but not as important as the enrollment of other people and them understanding where you're going and buying into it. I think there was a good paradigm, if you will, that I use is that the quality of what the outcome is a multiplicative factor of the quality of the answer and the level of buy-in and engagement. So you could have a 10 answer and a 1 buy-in and you get a 10, but you could go with a 5 answer and a 5 buy-in, you get 25. So you got to really think about how, you know, even though that this is the perfect answer, how do I adjust in a way that will get more buy-in and execution and therefore yield greater results.
And that goes back to instinct that you talked about.
Correct.
Yeah.
But that applying that instinct around the people factor,
right?
Not just the business itself.
Right.
Yeah, and the culture over there at Cinnabon, that's important too. We hear that time and time again in the studios from anybody who's in charge of that. What are you doing specifically to keep the good talent and recruit good talent over there?
Yeah, I think from a perspective of, I think people, first of all, they like to win. And so that helps when you're winning.
Yes.
And so when we have a lot of growth, that's a lot of opportunity. And so I think a lot of people will say, oh, well, the growth of the business, that's, of course you want that. Yeah, but I want that because that allows me to provide opportunities. So now 2/3 of the team that we had on the field has now been promoted or moved into new roles in a 12-month time frame.
That fills a void or leaves a void.
Well, that provides opportunity
and
then development. And then I think it's continuing to provide a fun and collaborative and non-hierarchical culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our new office space helps facilitate that. It's an open workspace. You know, I'm the only one with an office and I'm converting that into a meeting room.
Hmm.
So it's very much about us collaborating and spending time together, focused on what we're going to do. And staying inspired and engaged and believing in where we can get there.
And you designed the new space to help that grow and foster even more collaborative efforts as well. And you also mentioned delivering the training there while you. I think that kind of plays in the culture as well, making it fun for people to learn more and execute their job better as well.
Absolutely. Our team does a fantastic job providing onboarding for new franchisees mm-hmm. and new bakery managers. And I think an exciting part there is we're also applying technology. Through the iPad, we have a new partnership with PlayerLink that puts all of our training in an interactive manner onto an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, again, leveraging that ecosystem that we're putting into the bakeries, paired with, yes, this fun program that we're developing around Wow You is how we wow, and there's recognition underneath that. And you know, from a culture standpoint, you cascade that to the bakeries. We're redoing the uniforms. We're spending a couple bucks more on the t-shirt. And guess what? It makes a difference.
People feel better about wearing it. The people see the customers as well as the associates. But how are you delivering the Wow You? Is it instructor-led training? Is it more e-learning? What does that look like?
It's a combination. It's a combination of some classroom, but it's highly interactive. We try to minimize the amount of PowerPoint presentations.
Right.
And make it more interactive as well as in bakery training, and then leveraging technology, not as the end game, but of course, something to enable the transfer of knowledge and then getting out of the notion of we got big binders, now take that big binder back to the bakery and then there it sits on the shelf.
And memorize it or forget it, right.
Right. And so now you can pull the iPad out, you can pop a video up and we can start to see it. It also allows us, as we start to move into more robust performance management systems, is to understand what's going on at the bakery. We can look and say, oh, wow, we're not selling enough beverages. So what's going on there? Oh, we're not upselling because we know that from our mystery shop program.
Hmm.
Let me look at the training that's going on there. Is anybody using the upsell module or our host, what we call our host program? And then that we can quickly diagnose and start providing people tools and training to start to address that and drive that wow guest experience, which drives top line and ultimately bottom line.
Well, it sounds exciting and fun over there. I know creating a great culture for people to live, work, and grow, for sure.
Yeah, and I kind of want to go to my fun round.
Okay. Now, this is the fun segment,
this
right?
This is the fun segment. Okay. I just want to ask some crazy questions. Well, first of all, what's your favorite Cinnabon product?
Gosh, I love Bites. I love Bites because it's everything that's Cinnabon, and it's portable, and it's easy, and I can do it on the go.
Nice.
Okay. Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Okay. Hot dogs or hamburgers?
Hamburgers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot?
No.
The beach or the mountains?
Beach.
If we were to come to your home for dinner, what would you serve?
Whatever you like. Oh. You're the guest.
Nice.
That's good.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
How weird am I? Well, I have my idiosyncrasies, but I don't think there's anything extraordinary. So I guess I'm going to go with a 5.
Okay.
Five.
Halfway weird.
Tuna salad or chicken salad?
Tuna salad.
Drama or comedies?
Comedies.
Yep.
Have you ever stolen a pen from work?
A pen from work? I don't use pens anymore. I use styluses only.
Oh, interesting. So your technology at a personal technology, level. Right.
Exactly. Apple Pen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is your favorite daily wear attire? Not what you have to wear, but if you could wear it, what would it be?
You know, that's also a fun thing about focus brands and Cinnabon is, obviously we want to look professional, but we wear what we want to wear. And so what I like to wear, typically is a sport coat, button down and jeans, and a variety of different types of shoes, depending if I'm treading in the back of a bakery or if I'm treading the streets of New York, but that's typically the garb that you'll find me in.
Okay. And the last one, dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Nice. I'd like to ask about your legacy, not only at Cinnabon, from the employees there, what you hope to impress on them and leave with them, but maybe for your children as well. They could tune this in 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and hear their father on the radio from a different perspective that they may never have. So speak to them and also the employees there about what you want them to remember Joe Guth by.
Well, I hope, if anything, it's been probably two things. One, to really see just how far and how big this brand can be, to reckon that the difference between our brand awareness and the size of the business is in fact the opportunity, and that we're starting to realize that, and that's opportunity for them. But the second piece, and probably the more important one, is a focus on people. Mm-hmm. And that we are very much, and I think this probably goes for most industries, but especially so for food service, mm-hmm. This is a people business more than it is a food business. And your focus on people, the development of those people, providing what they want, what they need to thrive and achieve is ultimately what a leader's job is. Mm-hmm. I guess the last piece of that is inspiring, which kind of overrides both those, which is providing that inspiration to achieve and to develop and be better.
And you mentioned your seven-year-old said, you're the president. What if he comes to you and says, Daddy, I want to be president of Cinnabon one day? What would you say?
You know, I would say that's fantastic, first of all. But I would try not to be quite so specific. There's there's absolutely no way, if you asked me 10 years ago where I was going to be, that I would have been able to predict this.
So you just took opportunities, you followed your instincts, your passions in life, and this has led you to where you are today. So don't be so rigid and focused on one specific goal, but be adjustable and willing to change along the way.
Yeah. I knew I wanted to lead an organization and run a business. I knew that pretty early on in my career, probably only just a few years out of out of undergrad. But before I'd gotten my MBA, I knew that's ultimately what I wanted to do. But what industry, what brand, how I was going to get there, I mean, there's just no, I mean, I've taken roles. The one piece of advice that I would tell is to get to roles like this, they're fairly desirable. So I'm feel very fortunate to have had the opportunity and humbled to work with such a great team. But to really get those kind of opportunities on an accelerated basis, you have to be willing to do the things that others won't. Mm-hmm. My first general management role was at Coke, leading the vending business for the U.S. Well, at the time, the role didn't really exist, and B, the business was in a free fall.
Yeah.
It was in the recession when I took the role. And so it was a largely at-work-based business. There was a huge contraction, obviously. So there weren't a lot of people raising their hands to take the reins on that. And so by doing those things, that's what got me those opportunities, and eventually allowed me to have the experience to be able to take a role like this.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. Really real world testimony, personal growth and success for Mr. Joe Guth, president of Cinnabon. I think there's nothing but great things on the horizon for both you and the organization.
Yes. And just to wrap things up, how can our audience learn more about Cinnabon or get in touch?
Well, I would say a couple of ways. One is obviously going to Cinnabon.com. We have all our story and things along those lines. But probably the best way is to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We recently were cited by Adweek for our launch on Snapchat. So kudos to Jill Thomas and the team, the marketing team, and how fantastic they've been. So it's really been a fantastic ride in that. And we have such a strong social media presence that I think that's one of the things that I believe would really, really benefit us or be a great way to follow us. Well, and of course, please come by our local Cinnabon.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That's the only real way to experience
it. Absolutely. You got
to
smell it in person. Taste it for real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure interviewing you today. And I want to thank you for coming on Business Radio X. I really appreciate it. And if your business is doing something exciting and you would like to be featured on Business Radio X, reach out to us on the contact page at businessradiox.com. All right, my friends, thank you for listening. I'm Alex Gossett-Shiflett, your hostess with the mostest. And as always, I'm wondering who will be my next guest on Business Radio X.